Sex.
Oh, make sure she's out of the door.
Sex.
Okay, I can talk. I thought about talking about they're in children's church, and I thought, no, I don't want to talk about that. They're in children's church. But that's the topic today that we're going to talk about. The topic today we're going to talk about from the book of Proverbs talks all about sex. And there are a number of ways I could have entitled this sermon, and some more are shocking than others. I've thought of several shocking ones, and I'm not even going to share them with you this morning. I thought I could title it, Why Sex? That's a pretty tame one. Why Sex? Or Sexual Wisdom are some of the more tamer ones that I considered. But I went with the title, Wisdom of Sexual Purity, because I wanted to keep that idea of P&B PG and my message as well as my title. But sex is a topic that's not often tackled in the church. It's not because it's not biblical or because the Bible doesn't talk about it. In fact, sex is talked about frequently in the Bible. For those of you who have been reading through the book of Leviticus, we did have this last week several passages talking about sexual purity, who you can and cannot have sex with, and all those lists of laws in the Leviticus. But for many people, it's a taboo topic and should not be discussed in mixed company, and so therefore people just don't like to talk about it. Plus, with the current controversies about gender dysphoria and sexual pluralism, let me say that word again there. Plus, with the controversies of sexual dysphoria, gender dysphoria, and sexual... I just can't say it. Sex is not... Anyways, sexual pluralism, many times there are disclaimers that you might need to have, say, you know, that this is the case here, but not the case here. It's confusing. Sexual purity is something, though, I think we do need to talk about. And it's not just for young people. I'm not just talking to the young people this morning. It's a problem for all of us, adults as well. Sexual purity is something we need to talk about. It's everyone needs a reminder about the right and wrong ways to express the sexuality and how to keep it pure and godly, like the Bible talks about. And the book of Proverbs has a unique place in looking at this wisdom about sex and sexual purity. We have been studying here for the last several weeks the proverbial wisdom from the book of Proverbs. And I told you that most of the Proverbs probably were written by Solomon. That's who we think it was written by, this one who was gifted with an extraordinary amount of wisdom by God. And it was written in order to teach his children, his child, his son in this case, even about all that wisdom that he's given and wants to pass on to them. But even with all the wisdom that Solomon had, one of the key faults of Solomon that we read in the Bible is that he had a problem with sex. I mean, that was one of his failings. We read that he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. So how do we interpret the proverbial sayings in light of all this information? Were these proverbs written before or after Solomon fell prey to the sexual temptation that we see in the Bible? Because, you know, as we read some of these things, especially through Proverbs 5 and through 7 that we'll look at this morning, there are many warnings about falling prey to sexual temptations. And it seems like Solomon might be telling his son here, don't be seduced. But he doesn't really say in here, learn from what I've done wrong. He doesn't say that in this passage. And so maybe he wrote these Proverbs to his children before he actually fell prey to them. But as I look closer at these next three chapters of Proverbs, time and time again, I read that, hey, this is given to my son. Son, remember this. Remember from your mother. Remember from your father. All these things. And in Solomon's case, he had several wives, 700 of them. And being written to his son, it implies that he had sex and had a son. And actually, I found this surprising. I didn't realize this. In the Bible, it really doesn't say that Solomon had a lot of children. It only mentions one child by name, Rehoboam, who became king after Solomon, was the only son that was mentioned we read all about David's sons and daughters, but we don't read anything about Solomon's sons and daughters. I don't know how many of his wives had children or not. The Bible doesn't tell us, but it kind of implies that he does have that Solomon was written after his experience of wrong sexual purity, the sexual experience from a bad and sinful nature. In other words, he is saying, learn from my mistakes, even though he does not actually say it directly. And I'm going to point this out a couple places as we looked at this passage this morning. But let's get us into how Solomon wants to teach us here and what Solomon wants us to gain from this next section of Proverbs. And what he wants us to teach us is how to be sexually pure. Adultery and sexual immorality will lead us down the wrong road, but sexual purity will result in a rich life. And so let's look at sexual purity this morning, and let's look at some of the things that we can learn from it. First of all, we can learn the tempting nature of sexuality. Before I start that, I should probably go back here. Before I want to start that, I just want to let you know, I'm going to look at Proverbs chapter 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7, and all of them have these teachings and lessons about sexual purity kind of all mixed together. And I'm going to kind of separate them out. It's kind of hard to outline this section of scriptures because it talks about sexual purity in one chapter, it talks about sexual purity in another chapter, talks about it in chapter 7. And I'm just going to kind of combine them and merge them together to kind of get our three lessons this morning. So that's how I'm going to kind of piece these puzzles together for this morning. And the first thing, like I said, we learn from sexual wisdom of sexual purity is that the tempting nature of sexuality. That's the first thing Solomon wanted to teach his son, his children, was that sex is very tempting, especially the kind that is forbidden or is sinful. We will talk about the right way of sexuality in a minute, but let's start with the verses that talk about adultery and prostitution. This kind of sex is very enticing, very attractive. On the surface, it's very appealing, inviting even. It's very seductive and pleasurable at first. And that's what it says here as we start in chapter 5 of Proverbs. Chapter 5, Proverbs, starting in verse 1, says this. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to the words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of the adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. I like that imagery here. It's a smooth, tasting, desirable thing. It's inviting, it's pleasurable. Solomon does not contradict this in any way, that sex, especially forbidden sex, is actually very attractive, very tempting to go through. In fact, he talks about this in chapter 6 as well. Chapter 6, verse 23 says this. Again, for the commands, these commands that he's given to us, his wisdom, are a lamp. This teaching is a light for correction of discipline, or the way of life, keeping you from the immoral women, from the smooth tongue of the wayward wife. Do not lust in your heart after her beauty, or let her captivate you with her eyes. Again, very appealing. It's very tempting to want to give in to this kind of sex, this kind of adultery. It's a smooth tongue, a lustful beauty, captivating eyes, very things that you are looking for in someone that you want to have sex with. Someone that seems so good on the surface, and yet, as we'll see in a minute, so bad. Chapter 7 is actually the longest section that deals with this tempting nature of a sexual encounter. In fact, this section here is actually written as a story in chapter 7, written as if it's a third person looking down on the street and seeing this seduction take place in front of his eyes. And we'll look at that in a minute. But let's read that passage here from chapter 7, verse 6 through 21. At the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice and saw among the simple, I noticed a young man, a youth who lacks judgment. Now, we're going to talk about this youth here in a minute, so pay attention to what he does. He is going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night was set in. Then came out a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. They are out in the streets and on the corners. On every corner she lurks. She took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face she said, I have a fellowship offering at home. Today I fulfilled my vows. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and I found you. I've covered my bed with the colored linens from Egypt. I perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us drink deeply of love till morning. Let us enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not at home. He is gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money, and he will not be home till the full moon. With persuasive words, she led him astray and seduced him with her smooth talk. Again, this idea that this temptation is just so appealing, so wonderful. In fact, it talks about this simpleton, this youth who lacks judgment, going down the street corner, probably a bad idea to begin with in the first place. We'll talk about it in a minute. But it seems to imply that he should know better than walking at this point in this part of town. And this woman comes out, dressed to attract, and she initiates this sexual encounter by kissing him and by inviting him in, and something that a chaste woman in those days would not do. And she offers him a good time, a feast. Starts out by saying, "I have a fellowship offering." Now, if you've been reading through the book of Leviticus, like you should be, this last couple of weeks we've been talking about different fellowship offerings and the offerings that are offered on the sacrifices there in Leviticus. And one of those offerings is called a fellowship offering. And part of the fellowship offering, you offer part of that animal to God, burn it up on the altar, but part of that animal is saved back and is given to the priest or to the person that offers a sacrifice, and they can eat it. And it's a holy sacrifice that they eat in a holy place, and it's one of those things that if you don't eat it all at once, then you need to throw it away. It says, hey, don't save it till the next day, because if you save it till the next day, it'll become unholy, and you'll be sinning because of it, and therefore just dispose of it, because if you don't eat it up on that one day. And so this woman is saying, hey, come, I got this feast for you. I need to eat it now because it'll go bad. And if you don't come in with me, I'm not going to be able to eat it all, because she says later on, my husband's not home. I'm here all alone. So come, I'm going to give you a feast. Come feast with me. Have a great time. Who would not want free food? Yeah, exactly. Come feast with me. That's what she's offering. Plus she says that's not all food that she has to offer him. She has sheets on her bed from Egypt, the kind of cotton that is just so pure and so thing. Kind of reminds me, have you guys seen the commercial for MyPillow? Those new sheets, those Giza Dream sheets? Yeah, Giza, the area in Egypt from the Giza in the Nile River. MyPillow man knew Proverbs, because Proverbs 1 knew about the Egyptian sheets as well, right? Yeah, I'm not sure if that's where he got this idea from, but right here in Proverbs, hey, I got Egyptian sheets on my bed. Wonderful, right? That's high quality stuff. I haven't got them myself. They are expensive from what I see, unless you get them on their sale. But anyways, the Egyptian sheets are just so fancy. Even back in Solomon's time, this must have been true. And then this myrrh and aloes and cinnamon, these spices associated with wealth and well-being. Hey, come, I'm well off, is what she's saying here. It kind of implies, and I was going to say this later on, but it kind of implies, hey, I don't need your money. I got enough money already, so you can come in. I won't even charge you for my prostitution. It's kind of that implication even here. She tells him, hey, you don't need to worry about my husband. He's far, far away, not expected home anytime soon. No one's going to catch us. It's come, free food, free sex. What else could you want? And this fool, as we'll see in a minute, falls for it. Because it's so tempting, right? It's so tempting. All this time, it's enticing him, seduces this young man. And like I said, I think this might be Solomon's way of saying, hey, this is what happened to me. I was enticed and seduced by my wives, and they led me astray. Maybe he was kind of doing the story in third-person mode, looking down upon this youth and saying, hey, you know, if you look down, that was probably me when I was young and when I was your age. I just didn't know better because, hey, I fell for this. It was kind of like a win-win situation. The youth gets what he wants, this food and sex, and this woman gets what she wants, right? Gets rid of her food, gets her, uses up her good-smelling house, and the sheets are no longer are good sheets, and she doesn't have to waste that time. And again, she initiates this, so it seems like this is all just come in. I'll give you everything, and you don't need to worry about giving me anything. Even though she's technically not called a prostitute here, she's dressed like a prostitute, it says. But come on in. Come on in, this woman invites. But is it worth the risk? This woman says, no one's going to be the wiser. No one else is at home. I have to use up all this food or go to waste. Everything seems comforting and designed to please the senses. Even the clothing she wears implies looking like she's a prostitute for lustful eyes. And after all, he is on her side of town, right in front of her house. I mean, it seems like he was kind of wanting to come here anyways, and so come on in. This simple youth is already tempted in this wrongful encounter. And as I looked at this passage, I thought, you know what? Today's, the temptations are no different. Sex is still appealing. I don't know about you, but that lustful eyes are something that I fall for all time. They are, it's still attractive. And although we might not find ourselves walking in the red light district, we still have those temptations all around us. Kind of interesting. I kind of wanted to know, those, did my research here on what these proverbs and sayings like the red light district mean. You know where the red light district phrase comes from? In the old days when they were working on the railroad, these railroad people had the red lights, the flash for the railroad, would go to houses as they traveled on the train throughout the nation, need some place to stay and have sex, would go to prostitute houses and would leave the red lights outside the door, so that way if the train would have to go suddenly, they would know where to find them, would go and knock on the door and say, hey, come on, the train's leaving, we gotta go. And the red lights were there lighting the streets, so that became the red light district, because that's where the people who fall for that kind of temptation fall for. That kind of thing. So, like I said, the availability today is all around us, not just in those bad areas of town. I mean, you can open your computer nowadays and have an email inviting you to a website or all kinds of pornography. That's what I'm saying. That kind of caters to us. It's so appealing, especially for the male people males who lust with their eyes. That's why it's so important to have proper internet filters on your phones or on your computers. Because again, temptations are all around us and they are attractive on the surface. They promise a good time and low-risk link-ups that lead many astray. And this doesn't just not apply to men. This applies to women as well, because women do have some temptations as well sexually. Women have their own ways of being attracted to certain things and draws them away from sexual purity. So how do we stop or resist these strong temptations? Well, as I already hinted at, first of all, avoid those places where those things might tempt us. That's why, like I said, have a computer filter on my computer, so that way if I try to go to the wrong website, they'll say, boop, blocked, can't go there. Right? It's very, if I am tempted, that stops it right there, and I can say, okay, if it's blocked, then I should not be watching it. If the computer says it's wrong for me, right? That's why I also quickly delete some of my spam email, because you get spammed all the time with these emails, and I look through them, and if you look carefully on some of them, they're temptations. Hey, click on this link, and you'll come and have the pictures of me without clothes or whatever it might be. And so sometimes I quickly just delete those things, because I know, hey, those are not for me either. I know if I start to harbor sexual thoughts in my head, it might grow into full-blown temptations, and it'll be hard to resist because of the enticing nature it has. And don't watch shows or movies or read books that may tempt you away from sexual purity that God wants to keep in your life. Keep yourself from those things. Keep your life entirely out of those things so you will not fall prey to the appealing nature. But there's another way to resist tempting nature, and that leads to my second point here. Because it goes back to that saying from Shakespeare. You know it from Shakespeare, all that glitters is not gold. Because we can resist temptation because of the resulting nature of strain. The tempting nature of sexuality, but the resulting nature of strain. The Bible says clearly that what the results are if we give in to temptation, especially in this area of sexual temptation. And we have much that is intertwined in these sections of Proverbs that I've read already. But let's start back in chapter 5. Chapter 5, verse 4 and 5 says this. This is right after it says that she is sweet like honey, right? Her lips of adulterous drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. Well, that says here in the following verse. But in the end, she is as bitter as gall, as sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths are crooked, and she doesn't know it. Or knows it not, right? Notice the words of these verses, gall. I like that picture here, because instead of that sweet-smelling honey, that sweet-tasting honey, it's like that bitterness that just comes up from your belly when you burp or you have that indigestion. This last week, actually, I don't know why, but at the table one night this last week, That happened to me. I had some indigestions for something. I don't know what I was eating or whatnot, but that bitterness came up to my mouth, and I tried drinking water, tried to eat more to kind of get that food out, that taste out of me. You've experienced that. It's kind of the heartburn or kind of the indigestion that kind of creeps back up, and I didn't puke or anything, but that's kind of another thing there, but kind of that idea that, it's kind of bitterness in your mouth, and it's gall. That's what gall is. It's that bitterness in your mouth that doesn't go away quickly. It's sour and bitter. It burned because it could not be washed away, and it just had to take a while just to kind of get away. And I find it quite enlightening that Solomon uses this in comparison with honey. It says, the adulterous woman's words are like honey, but they turn out to be gall. You know, something that seems sweet, and yet it's going to give you indigestion. Something that's going to make you want to puke. Something that is just gall. And so this idea of gall being bitter in contrast to honey, and of course, I haven't done this myself, but have you ever had a lot of honey, and that honey just doesn't sit well with you after a while because you had too much of it? I kind of had that picture as well, that too much of a sweet thing, too much sweet, just turns your stomach sour. So there's that gall there. Then we have this idea of the double-edged sword, okay? Now, a double-edged sword is useful for one thing and one thing only. Death, killing, right? You can't use it as an axe because it's on both sides. You can't use it for a plow or can't do things. It's only use and only purpose is to destroy. I mean, it's not a one-sided sword that you can kind of do things with. It's a double-sided sword, a weapon that leads to death. The only thing that it ends with is the grave. And this picture, just a sharp double-edged sword. And of course, it talks about going down to the grave. But then I also noticed here at the end, it says her paths are crooked. You remember last week when we talked about Proverbs 3, 5, and 6? Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and with all your mind, and all your strength, and lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he will what? Make your path straight. She's not following the Lord. This woman is leading a crooked life. Solomon is saying, remember just a few paragraphs ago, back in a couple chapters ago, I talked about the straight path of the Lord. Her path is anything but straight. And she goes through life with crooked paths, and she doesn't even know she's walking a crooked path. She just thinks this is life. This is good. This is beneficial. And so this result of strain, it says, hey, I just have this idea, I don't know what is the difference between right and wrong. It's someone not directed by God in all his ways. But Solomon is not done describing this strain off the straight and narrow way. He goes on to say in chapter 5 this. He says, now then, my sons, and this is actually plural. Yeah, it is plural. So there is pluralness of sons here. Talking about more than one. Listen to me. Do not turn aside from what I say. Keep a path far from her. Do not go near her door of her house, lest you give your best strength to others and your years to one who is cruel, lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich another man's house. You know, you're going to lose your wealth, is what he's saying here. At the end of your life, you'll groan when your flesh and your body are spent. You'll say, how I've hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or listen to my instructors. I have come to the brink of utter ruin in the midst of the whole assembly. You know, you get to the end of your life and you'll say, where did everything go? What happened? What happened to all the things that I earned? Well, they were been wasted because of these temptations that you fall into. You're just going to lose even your own strength. That's what I say. It says, you know, avoid the places. That's kind of the first point that I made. But if not, you're just going to ruin your health, lose your strength. Reminds me of another proverb, actually in Proverbs 31, the wife passage. But before it talks about the good wife there in Proverbs 31, it says this, and I didn't write it down on my screen because I thought of it at the last minute. But it says, and this is one of my favorite verses as I was growing up, and a verse that I kind of put in my life. It says, don't waste your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. Have you ever heard that verse before? I love it. Don't waste your strength on women. You hear me, Sam? You're listening there? Don't waste your strength on women. Your vigor on those who ruin kings. You hearing that, ladies? Not just the men, too, right? You ladies, don't waste your strength on women. Now, that's not all women. I applied it in my life as all women because, but don't waste your strength on them. Don't spend your strength on people that there's, especially those temptings, that things are just going to lose your strength, your health. You're going to lose your wealth by giving your money to another, it talks about in this passage. It says, when your life is over, you'll live with regret for not heeding the warnings that I'm giving to you. You'll say, hey, I was told to do this, but I didn't listen to it. And now my life is on the brink of ruin, right? And so I think Solomon is essentially saying here, you know, this is, learn from me, you know, because my life is on the brink of ruin because I did not listen to my own wisdom. So listen to my wisdom like I did not, is what Solomon is essentially saying here. So that's why I think this is written by Solomon later on in his life, at least this part. But I love what it says in chapter 6, verse 27. It says, can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife. No one who touches her will go unpunished. I like that. This proverb, you've probably all heard the proverb, if you play with fire, you're going to get burned. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if this is where it came from. But it has a very similar message. Actually, the idea that if you play with fire, you're going to get burned actually was attributed, according to the website that I went to, by Bam Bam Bigelow. But there's also, they also pointed to another proverb very similar that I did put up on the screen, a Chinese proverb from about 400 BC, a little after Solomon, that says, those who play with fire perish by it. So very similar to what Proverbs says here. They might have got it from Proverbs or whatnot, but don't play with fire. You're going to get burned. It's going to hurt you. Fire is not something to mess around with. It might appealing, and oh yes, it's you know, I love playing with fire, and I've gotten burned several times too because of that thing. But then, as I was researching this proverb, I found another one that was equally insightful. That's kind of a play on another proverb, another famous proverb. But I want to let you see what you think about it. It says, "Build a man a fire, and he'll be warm for a day." Set a man on fire, and he'll be warm for the rest of his life. Now think about that. Set a man on fire, he'll be warm the rest of his life. How long is that life going to be? Right? If you set him on fire, he's going to be warm. Not going to make it very long, though. It leads to death. Don't scoop fire in your own lap is what Solomon is saying here. Come on, people. It's tempting. Yes, 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 I understand that. But you know where it's going to lead to? You know what the end result's going to be, Solomon says here? It's just like those people that are being trapped by their own traps. In fact, this is what he goes on to say in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 21 through 27. It says, with persuasive words, she led him astray. This is talking about that story of the youth there. She seduced him with her smooth talk. And then what it says here? All at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter. Like a deer stepping into a noose until an arrow pierces his liver. Like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it'll cost him his life. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn from to her ways or stray into her paths. Many, many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. I like that imagery there. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. How graphic could that be? How graphic? I mean, it's like an animal just ready to be slaughtered. I mean, I worked at a pig farm back in my high school, college days, and there was a couple times where I helped load the pigs up onto the truck to be led to the slaughter, and they knew nothing. They're just following the path. I had to zap them a little bit to get them on that way or kind of spur them on that way, but they got on the truck like, hey, this is just another cage to go to, because we transferred them to different cages as well throughout their lifetime. They didn't know it, that they're being slaughtered. Would they willingly go to that place if they knew that death invited them to there? That death awaited them? Would a bird fly into a trap? This is what we talked about in chapter 1, that first proverb, right? Proverb chapter 1, verse 17. Where did I put it? On my notes here. But Proverbs 1:17 that talks about the fools who are so foolish that they'll fall for their own traps. They're so foolish that they'll just step into their own things. I told you then, it's like shooting yourself in your own foot. Ooh, this is a nice gun. Boom. But it's even worse than that here because it's death. It's not just hurting yourself. It's death. It's like this way, having that mark of a landmine and saying, oh, there's a marked landmine. Let me go there. Boom. That's what it's all about. You're inviting your own death. How tempting is that? It's still tempting, though, isn't it? Even though you know it's a landmine, even though you know sex and sexual impurity is a landmine, we're so attracted to it. We want it. And this is, why would you want to be so stupid? Well, it goes back to that first point. Sex is tempting. It's a strong bait. It promises much, but delivers little. In fact, it delivers death. This is why time and time again, people set themselves on fire. Not literally, but spiritually with sex. They shoot themselves in their foot. They step on that landmine, knowing that the harm they're going to do to themselves is not enough many times. Just knowing the result of straying is not enough many times. Not enough to avoid her neck of town. Not enough for that temptation when it comes along to shove it away and ignore it. So if you cannot avoid it, or even if you know what the consequences is if you do it, how can you be sexually pure? How can you resist these temptations? Well, I think this is where Solomon comes in with the third lesson we could learn about sexual purity. Learning the nature of staying. The learning nature of staying. You have that temptation of sexuality, the resulting nature of straying, but the learning the nature of staying is a very, very important passage that we need to look at from Proverbs as well. Again, he mixes these up, starting back in Proverbs chapter 5, he says this, 5:15, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in your streets, your streams of water to public squares, let them be yours alone. Never to be shared with strangers. Talking about being with one woman. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breasts satisfy you always. May you be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an adulteress, he says there. Why embrace, it continues on, the bosom of another man's wife? For a man's ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all his past. He says, hey, look what you got. Look what you're going to throw away if you commit adultery. You have a wife, a lovely wife, a caring individual who wants to be there, not a stranger. And all these metaphors describing this wife of your youth as a loving doe, as a graceful deer, reminded me of how Proverbs describes his wife in the Song of Solomon's. Song of Solomon's is a wonderful passage talking about how beautiful his wife is. Let me read you just a little section here in chapter 4. And this gets a little graphic, so PG-13 people, if you're watching at home, how beautiful you are. This is a man talking about his wife, my darling. How beautiful your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from the Mount of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, very white, coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. None of them is alone. They have all our teeth. That's a good thing. Have a wife with good teeth. Continues on here. Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Then the more, not PG-13. Your breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. How beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. Right, this, you have something at home to touch and to hold and to have. Don't walk those paths that lead to temptation. These are so enjoyable. Plus the fact that the end of this passage talks about how God is going to see you. Even though the husband might not catch you, even though the husband might be away, as that story in chapter 7, God is going to see you. He sees everything. So you cannot get away with anything. Sure, you may not get caught in the act by someone here on earth, but God knows. And he will ultimately judge. But how else can we resist the temptation here? Chapter 6 talks about it as well. It says, "My son, keep your father's commands, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart forever. Fasten them around your neck. When you walk, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you awake, they will speak to you. For these commands are a lamp. This teaching is a light. And the corrections of discipline are a way of life, keeping you from the immoral woman, from the smooth tongue of the wayward wife." The Bible, my teachings, my wisdom. Hey, if you keep these words of wisdom, if you bind them around your heart and tie them around your neck, use them as a light for your path, it'll keep you away from these type of sins, these kind of sexual immoralities. Make wisdom part of your life. This is what he continues on in chapter 7. It says very much the same thing. He says, "My son, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Keep my commands and you will live, not die in those sins. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye." I'll talk about it in a minute. "Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablets of your heart. Say to wisdom, 'You are my sister,' and I will call understanding your kinsmen. They'll keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words." This temptation that they'll keep you from. These words of wisdom. I kind of like this idea that this is another subtle way of Solomon giving words to his son, saying, "Hey, this is my temptation. Don't follow for my things. Learn from this wisdom that I've given to you. Don't ignore it like I did. Make your wife like wisdom and as the apple of your eye." Now, I like this picture of the apple of your eye. It goes clear back to the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 32, God is talking about him and his people of Israel. And it says this in Deuteronomy 32. "In the desert land, he," God, "found him," Israel, "in a barren and howling waste. He shielded him and cared for him. He guarded him," Israel, "as the apple of his eye." God sees us as his chosen people, as his apple of his eye, special people. And he wants the best for us. And so he says, "Hey, here's the best. Let me teach you about what is sexually pure, what is sexually impure. Let me teach you. Learn from me because I love you so much. I want to keep you protected from death. I want you to live, right? I want you to live." And even David knew about this idea of the apple of the eye. David made a prayer in Psalm 17, verses 7 and 8. It says, "Show the wonder of your great love, who you saved by your right hand, those who take refuge from their foes. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me in the shadow of your wings." I mean, this is David's prayer that Solomon knew. You know, the apple of my eye. Guard me, protect me, keep me pure. Hide me in the shadow of your wings. You see, wisdom is a lesson that we can learn about staying. Because God has been faithful to us. God has stayed with us. And we need to be faithful in return by not straying and staying with our faithful wife. And second of all, we should treat this woman as if, it says here, our sister. Oops, I went the screen on there. Back in Proverbs there. Treat wisdom as your sister. Treat other women as your sisters. Treat them as your own kin. If you look at someone and says, "Oh, that's someone's sister, or that's my sister, or someone else's daughter," are you going to have improper sex with them? No. You're not going to take advantage of someone else if they're your sister or someone else's sister or someone's daughter. So all these things kind of help us and guide us to keep us staying. We need to learn those lessons of staying faithful to God and faithful to his word, this wisdom that he's given to us. And so there's one more practical way that I know helps people keep themselves from this temptation of adultery by making your desktop on your computer have a picture of your wife or your family. I know that's how some people keep themselves pure. Or on their phones, when they open up their phones, instead of having that generic wallpaper behind on their phones, they put a picture of someone that they care about. Now, I don't recommend that for dating, as far as putting a girlfriend as a photo or a boyfriend as their phone, because that might tempt you to stray toward that person. But when you're married, when you have that person that you love, having them right in front of you every day, every time you open your computer, every time you open your phone, helps remember, hey, this is who I am prepared for. This is who I promised to be with, to remain faithful with. And so remember, God wants us to remain pure to one woman and married with a strong motivation will help us resist the temptation of straying. So this is what we learn from the wisdom of sexual purity. We learn that there's a tempting nature to sexuality. And it's a real temptation out there, folks. Take measures to resist the temptation, to block those things. Because the result is of the nature of strain is death. It's going to lead straight to hell. You're going to burn, literally, in hell if you don't stay strong sexually. You might not die immediately, but it's like setting yourself on fire. It'll burn and consume you. And then we can learn the nature of staying, that God has given you that wife, that person to love and care for, just as we promise in our marriage vows. And to remain true to God's wise teachings as well, that he has given us his word to help us resist the temptation, resist that the result of that nature of strain, and learn more about God. So I hope that as we continue to learn more about God and his ways, that we'll be true to him, especially in this area of sexual purity.